This is Living Planet, I'm Neil King. And today we'll be kicking off the first episode of a naturally connected mini-series that should help you unwind over the next 3 weeks. And our first episode takes a closer look at foraging. A few years ago, scientists reported that while humans could potentially eat 3/4 of the 400,000 plant species on planet Earth, we actually only consume around 200. And even they will unlikely be available in the local supermarket. So what of the other 299,800 varieties? Many are used for medicinal purposes, but others are simply ignored, their edibility and nutritional value remaining broadly untapped. Could the renaissance of foraging for our supper tip the scales of the perceived useful versus useless plants that grow in our midst? Here is Tamsin Walker's take on foraging.
I recently stumbled across a medieval list of plants that call to mind fields, forests, and feasts filled with history and imagery. With entries like Mary's Bitter Sorrows, Devil Away, and Heavenly Way, it reads as much like a volume of religious poetry as an index of flora. Other old, if less biblical, compilations refer to some of the plants we still commonly eat today with similar flourish. Unlike the Latin names introduced by Swedish biologist Carl von Linné as a systemized means of classifying flora and fauna in the 1700s, those old descriptions conjure images of times and kitchens past, of brambles sitting neatly atop fingers of old to become thimbleberries, or the nocturnal accidents that gave dandelions their synonymous peder bed, and burdock burrs that stuck to clothing from the undergrowth to become beggar's buttons. Each name contains a tale, and each tale a thousand more. Yet the overarching story is one of our ancestors having lived not only in the world around them, but with it. Their knowledge of plant life was essential for their, and in turn our, survival. In other words, like the injured orangutan recently observed making its own plant-based paste to heal an open wound on its face, our forebears doubtless had a deeper understanding of what grew around them, a key to survival handed down from generation to generation, an ever-growing almanac of environmental understanding. And while many cultures continue to share and inherit insights into the world around them, for many of us, that understanding has been lost to the mechanized ease of the modern era. And I am one of those many. Despite the fact that I was raised watching my parents grow the food that appeared on our plates, or that I heard plant names like hops and comfrey often enough for them to seem like part of the family, when it comes down to it, I know very little about how to make use of what pushes its way up through the ground. But sometimes, if I sit quietly under a tree, by the side of a stream, or at the edge of a field, I can hear the whisper of some old connection I instinctively feel is still there. And now it's time to see if I can find it.
So here, does this remind you of anything, these leaves?
It looks a little bit like a berry.
Yeah,
like
good.
A raspberry or something.
Yeah, great. Yeah, you answered exactly correct. It's not a raspberry, but it's in the same family and in the rose family, Rosaceae. And often people mistake it for some kind of wild strawberry raspberry. But actually what we're looking for here is the roots. And they have these kind of spaghetti-like roots. And if you rub them and scrape it with your nail...
Hmm.
And you smell it, you should smell some kind of like, I'm not going to tell you, maybe you smell and see what you smell.
It smells like beetroot.
Then you have to scratch a bit deeper.
Should I know what it is?
Should be like in a chai spice mix. It's very light.
Like cloves?
Yes, you got it. It's clove root.
That's what this is,
yeah.
Clover.
Yeah, well, that's how you directly translate in German, Nelkenwurz.
Yeah.
In English, it's called wood avon. and it has the same properties as cloves do, but so it's a like local regional clove. So if you have like a toothache or if you have parasites, you can use those roots in the same way.
An urban park in the heart of the German capital, surrounded by the roar of constantly moving traffic, is a far cry from any medieval meadow and might not seem like a logical place to start the process of tapping into whatever ancient wisdom can possibly be stirred inside me. But within minutes of meeting Canada-born herbal educator Alexis Goetz, I realize it's as good a place as any. Perhaps, in fact, the best I could hope for.
The interesting thing is, in these Berlin parks, there's so much diversity. Like here we're looking and there's beech trees, there's an oak tree, there's a linden tree, we're just surrounded right here around us with multiple kinds of trees and then thus the plants that grow underneath.
Alexis, who traces her interest in understanding what grows around her to a year in Mozambique in her late teens, is an absolute fountain of plant knowledge. A self-described edible alchemist, she picks, pickles, dries, brews, and ferments what she finds on her proverbial doorstep, and shares her knowledge in the form of courses and occasional feasts made from what she forages. Her lab, which is not far from that doorstep, is a fascinating array of bottles and jars filled with plants for all eventualities. She's not the first person to point out to me that the nearly 4 million strong metropolis of Berlin is actually blessed with richer wildlife than the sprawling countryside that wraps around it, due largely to the monocultural expression of industrial farming, but she is the first to invite me to taste that diversity. A diversity that she breaks down into 52 seasons in recognition of the speed at which wild crops emerge and peak throughout the course of a calendar year.
This is yarrow. This is like this toothbrush looking. People can often mistake it for a wild carrot, which is a very dangerous family to mistake things with. So it's good to, come on a walk and recognize that. In Latin, Achillea millifolia, also known as Venus's eyebrow.
Suits you. And can you eat it like that, or do you need to do something with
it? No, you can eat it just like that. This is like one of my favorite herbs. It's a great woman's herb also for...
Medicinally,
yeah. Also for, like, it's also blood stilling, you would say, Blutstillend, so good for menstruation regulation, stuff like that.
What strikes me walking around the rainy park with Alexis is not just how little I know, but how much there is to know at foot level. There are so many shades and shapes of green that to the untrained and undiscerning eye, it's easy to be confused by volume and visual similarity, though at one point in time, that would have been different. People would have been able to pick out more than the nettles, dock leaves, and dandelions within my own immediate grasp. They would not only have known what they could and could not eat, but what to use to heal wounds or aches and pains, as well as when and where to find it. Again, I'm struck by how much knowledge we've relinquished to our modern and convenient means of existence.
I mean, a lot of people, their grandparents had this knowledge and we lost it because of, say, the Industrial Revolution, or because it just wasn't a cool thing to do. It was a poor people's thing to do. And sometimes I have older generation at my workshops and I'm talking about the beech nuts. And they're like, yes, we were sent out at recess to collect those for food after the war times. Like, that was necessity. And we went and we made nettle soup and we had to do these things.
That it isn't a necessity is doubtless something to be grateful for. But still, having an interest in the world around us also feels like a route to take better care of it. As David Attenborough once said, it's hard to expect people to protect what they don't care about and to care about what they've never experienced.
Tamsin will be right back after this short message.
Hi, this is Wonder, a podcast from Brazen. For 5 minutes each week, join us on an immersive and meditative sound journey where we explore some of the most extraordinary creatures, places, and natural phenomena. We give you a moment to breathe and wonder.
The more you know, the more you see. And then it starts to become exciting. And then you're like, hey, look, medicine. Hey, look, black currants. If you rub that between your fingers, what do you smell? Rub it, you have to break the oils.
That's not garlic.
Yeah, garlic mustard is called. Knoblauchgurke. Put that in between your sandwich, you know, and then you have this like nice...
So I can just eat this one as
well? Yeah, yeah.
Recent years have seen a resurgence in appetite for the experience of foraged food, with books, shows and podcasts promising to inform us modern beings how to eat from hedgerows, forests or urban parks. There are also introductory courses in many places around the world, and they're important because, as Alexis points out, it's easy to mistake one plant for another. She's seen a swelling in interest in her own guided tours, which invariably sell out. Something she puts down to people genuinely wanting to understand the world around them and keen to get back in touch with nature.
They realize that something's missing in their lives, and yeah, going for a walk is a nice thing, but as soon as you start seeing more, because you know more, it's a different kind of interaction with your environment. And it's an appreciation, right? So I go on walks and I feel like connected.
It is an appreciation. In the days and weeks since foraging with Alexis, I've walked in many green spaces, both inside and outside the city. Sometimes with intention, and sometimes more incidentally. But either which way, I've tried to remind myself that there's life where I tread, and to both walk and look with greater care. To not only open my eyes and imagination to the vibrancy of life on the verges, but a door to the place where that dormant collective knowledge of old is gently starting to flutter. I've taken a moment to really smell the ancient and comforting scent of elderflowers drifting softly on the air. I've picked nettles for tea, made sorrel soup, and used a few flowered leeks as seasoning, all of which I washed before using. I've also become good friends with a plant recognition app that's helping me put names to the species that have lined the edges of my existence for as long as I can remember. Recognizable as something, but nameless enough to be nothing. Knowing them now as wall barley, mugwort, burdock, garlic mustard, plantain, and ground elder makes them more real and more noticeable. On tiny patches of ground, I suddenly see what grows together, what grows where, and there's an unexpected comfort in that. I might be wrong, but it feels like the comfort of connection, of belonging to something, rather than living outside it. I'm still a very long way from understanding flora in the ways of traditional or old cultures, and there's every chance I'll never get there. But by exploring what's around me, I have got somewhere else, and that's to an acknowledgement of something else we must always have known. That each species has something different to offer. Maybe not directly to us, but to its ecosystem as a whole, of which we, modern or not, are an undeniable part.
This episode of Living Planet was produced by Tamsin Walker. It was edited by me, Neil King. Our sound engineer was Jürgen Kuhn. If you have any feedback or story suggestions, please just send us a voice message or email to livingplanet@dw.com. Any ratings or reviews you'd like to make on podcasting platforms are also very welcome. And don't forget to check us out at DW Podcasts on YouTube, where you'll find some bonus material and other great podcasts ranging from science to current affairs. We'll be back again next week with another naturally connected episode when Samantha Baker will sweep us away to one of America's most iconic national parks. Living Planet is produced by DW in Bonn, Germany.